Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Today is Monday. It's October 21st. It's 10 o'clock on the Eastern Seaboard, and we're going to be talking about all the news, all the information that's breaking right now. And we're going to go to the state and to the local level, internationally, all over the place. And we are also going to cover the latest Bluetooth issues that concern the city with regard to the Yonkers Police Department. We're going to talk about the amendment with regard to gambling and on the referendum this November, and a lot of other issues that come into play, as well as the Moreland Commission and so forth. So let's just dive right in. My name is Hezzy Harris. This is Westchester on the Level. And if you'd like to become engaged in conversation, you're more than welcome to it. Just give us a call. It's a local call, 347 area code 205-9201. Again, a local area code 347-205-9201. Now, the most interesting thing on the state level is Governor Cuomo's fears that he's losing in the casino amendment gamble. And this is an article written in the New York Post, page 6. Frederick Dicker is the author. And it's really quite interesting because we've certainly heard very little about it here. It was a few days ago that actually President Chuck Lesnik from the Yonkers City Council pointed out that he was uncertain as to where he would place his loyalties. When he found out that Yonkers Raceway and Empire City Casino would be in favor of approval of this referendum, then he decided that he would be as well. Well, this is what Frederick writes. He says, Governor Cuomo and his top aides, reacting to a just-completed secret poll, are increasingly worried that the constitutional amendment on the November 5 ballot to legalize casino gambling will be defeated. The Post has learned. We're talking about the New York Post. Now, insider said Cuomo has made it clear that his personal prestige is on the line over the amendment vote, and that he intends to go all out in the coming days to try to assure the measure is approved. If the amendment is defeated, Cuomo is defeated, and that's not the way the governor intends to kick off his reelection campaign for next year, said an administration insider. The secret polling data, a source close to the pro-casino effort said, shows an ongoing loss of support for the plan to legalize up to 7 full-blown commercial casinos, with the first to be built in the Catskills and other upstate areas. Now, while the most recent poll showed a narrow majority supporting the amendment, the number had dropped from previous polls. And that's important that it be repeated. Now, the movement is definitely in the wrong direction, and the governor and his people know it, said the source. An even more worrisome finding in the poll was that those who oppose the constitutional change feel far more strongly about their views than those who favor it, meaning the anti-group is more likely to vote on the measure. In addition, the lack of a hotly contested mayoral race is expected to suppress a strongly pro-gambling New York City election turnout. New York Jobs Now, a coalition of union, business, and gambling interests, including the state's existing racetrack casinos, is scrambling to raise funds for a costly last-minute media blitz to encourage a pro-amendment vote, it was learned. Now, a key reason that support for casinos is slipping is the recent disturbing revelation that Cuomo aides were involved in altering the language used on the ballot to make it more attractive to voters, a second source close to pro-amendment forces said. Quote, Cuomo's attempt to wire up the vote appears to have backfired with so many negative stories and editorials, the source said. Now, on another issue, which again is state concerning, which impacts, of course, everybody in the state. The Floundering Moreland Act Commission, named by Cuomo to investigate alleged but unspecified political corruption, fired off a series of subpoenas to many lawmakers and their private law firms last week, seeking of interest. They're not taking it lying down. Quote, the legislators and their law firms are furious. They see this as nothing more than fishing expeditions that invade their lawyer-client relationships, and they're getting ready to respond in court, said a source close to the legislature. Now, Cuomo, who earlier this year claimed that the legislature was the best in the nation, reversed course after U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara brought indictments against several lawmakers and accused Albany of having a, quote, show-me-the-money culture, end quote. Then, after Cuomo failed to win the legislature's approval for what he contended was a badly needed ethics reform package, he unleashed the Moreland Commission. Now, state lawmakers who are allowed to hold outside jobs have maintained that Cuomo's commission doesn't have a legal right to investigate the legislature because it is a separate branch of government. Whoa, isn't that interesting? So there you have it, and that's what's really the most pertinent stuff that is occurring right now with regard to state politics. And how it will affect us here locally. You know what is interesting with regard to Mr. Dicker's article about the recoil of some people in the public from promotion of this particular referendum on the November 5th election, general election, is the fact that I know, for example, I personally have no problem in supporting the process in which there would be a greater emphasis on the northern part of the state. I hope they've done their job in figuring out and in ascertaining whether the effort upstate will actually bring in more revenue into communities that are desperate for jobs, employment, and other issues, all concerning funding. But I'll be honest with you, I am so disgusted by the project of Capella Enterprises, and they have a project there in the Catskills. I would rather see them go belly up before we even endorse this project, because they would be some of the beneficiaries of this new casino gambling. And I don't think they need to or should be even considered in the equation. They are one of the poxes, one of the ugly scars that are on the landscape, because these were the same people that had held Yonkers, for example, in abeyance for 12 goddamn years while they were struggling to put their funding sources together. And let's face it, they're going to be borrowing money left and right from the state, and they're just not good at getting it all together. They can't seem to manage their projects. I know some people will look at White Plains and say, oh, they did great there. Well, maybe they did, but they lost their shirts on it because they didn't know what they were doing and when they were doing it. Their timing was wrong. They really messed up badly in New Rock City and New Rochelle. They were going to be doing other projects as well, and they got 18 memorandums of understanding by Mayor Bramson. Pointless, waste of time, but more importantly, it was also a financial burden on the city, which evidently didn't matter so much to Mr. Bramson, because I guess it's not his money and he didn't care. He was on a different trajectory, and it didn't seem to matter. Well, I'll tell you one thing. You can't work with people. You literally can't work with people who don't know how to manage a business where they claim to be expert. And the fact that Capelli's had a one-time relationship with none other than Trump and may still have it for all I know. I wouldn't want to besmirch Trump's name in relationship to Capelli. I think at one time they worked together, but that's of no consequence whatsoever. Not certainly today. I don't know if they have a relationship of any kind, but it certainly would be a waste of time to in any way ingratiate the Capelli Enterprises. This is their last-ditch effort to survive. And considering that they've literally created a scorched earth type of removal of themselves from the equation in so many places in Westchester County, they have burned and hurt economies all over the county. I can't imagine why we would want to even have anybody up in the Catskills to give the promises. And it's the same promises. You could practically overlay all the stuff that they promised Yonkers to the people in the Catskill area, and you will hear exactly the same thing. I don't even know who's involved up there anymore. Is it Louis Capelli, who's lost his faculties and can't seem to manage much of anything? Is it Joey Apicella that's still involved with him? I don't know. And it doesn't matter to me. Their resume, which shows a lack of accomplishment over the many years, just shows them how inappropriate it is. And you know, when I hear people say, oh, give them a chance, give them a chance, give them a chance for what? To prove that they're inept at what they do? Because that's really what it boils down to. And then you say, give them a chance. The economy was bad. But guess what, folks? There were many people who not only survived, but thrived in a bad economy. And they had no difficulty. There were stresses and there were challenges. But they thrived. They did well. They were able to meet the goals that they had set for themselves as companies and set for themselves in order to satisfy the communities in which they wanted to build and to develop. That's why it upsets me to no end when I hear that it's not the public's or the public shouldn't even be concerned about what's going on with the delayed hotel that was supposed to be built at the Cross County Shopping Center. Really? Who is the Cross County Shopping Center operation to tell the public here in Yonkers? It's none of their business. Really? Oh, now it's none of their business because they've already garnered the support and approval and all approvals from the city of Yonkers. Now they no longer need anything. They've got their zoning and their planning, and they got everything going on that they need, and now they put everything on hold with no prospect for anything other than being told, well, we're going to build next year in the year 2014. Isn't that special? And God help us if the mayor in any way, shape, or form is involved in this BS that you heard. Remember I played you the taping that was left by the person in charge of Cross County Shopping Center? Yeah, she says it's none of the public's business to know. She didn't even want them to know what happened to two restaurants. I think it was Longfellow's or Longhorn, one of those names, some sort of grill, like a Western type Texas grill. And they're evidently one of the companies, including Olive Garden, that belong to this larger umbrella firm. And we're told, well, they had a bad quarter, so they're delaying everything. Really? I never got an official statement. And you know what? If they did issue an official statement, which all Wall Street firms do, bottom line is they would have said, well, we had a bad quarter. We have to reassess. And because of that reassessment, we're going to need to put these two restaurants that we plan to build in Cross County, we're going to need to put that on hold. because it would be too much of a strain on our financial prospects if we went as far as growing the firm as we had initially intended, but the economy has proven itself weaker than we had anticipated, and therefore it would be prudent of us to be able to hold on to whatever funding we need in order to be able to maintain the viability of the firm overall and eventually to the greater benefit of these two restaurants for the benefit of Westchester County's or Yonkers Cross County Shopping Center. Well, isn't it pathetic, though, that they never bothered to do that? That would be a respectful way of conducting their business, but no. I'm starting to believe that so many people in business today just don't give a rat's petunia about anything. It's just their way, and they believe that only their works, their arrogance, their derisiveness, their attacks, their constant maligning of everything that is regarded as prudent, as normal, standard protocol, they don't abide by it because, you know what, they believe they can get away with it. When you have a weak city like the city of Yonkers, particularly the Mayor Spano administration's inability to put it all in order, then you have to say, well, why not? If these people want to roll over every time there's pushback, then so be it. Except that we work here, we live here, and the point is it's not good enough. And it is really pathetic that the administration has yet to figure out what the real reason is for all of this instead of trying to send me on a wild goose chase over why this is happening. The truth is, it shouldn't be happening, and I don't care what their reasons are. They haven't made a public statement. There is no place where you could find out this. And the point is, why? Do people have to drive by the area in order to find out that nothing's happening? How many years has this project been on the books? How many years has this been promised? Oh, is this supposed to be another one of those rabbits that get pulled out of a hat by Mayor Mike Spano? Is he going to pull the rabbit out of the hat in the year 2014? Really? Oh, God, we're in re-election mode. The man hasn't even started to govern, and we're already in re-election mode for Mike Spano to be who knows what. Is he going to run to become the next mayor again? Is he running for a second term? He's produced nothing in the first term. It's already almost 22 months. We almost another week, and it'll be 22 full months that he's done nothing. Not even the first promise he said he would do, which was to get rid of and reduce to whatever it was supposed to be the fleet of cars that we allow to be used in the city. Isn't that amazing? Can't even do that. Well, he's too busy cutting ribbons. I don't even know if he's cutting ribbons in front of places that are actually opening or closing or did close or will open. I mean, how many years in advance are they cutting ribbons for projects that haven't even gone anywhere? How many years does that go on? What a game. What a game. Well, I think that most people in Yonkers are really switched on. They know what's going on. You can't fool people in Yonkers, that's for sure. You just can't fool them. You can't do that because the people in Yonkers have figured it all out. They know the histrionics. They know the sideshows. They know what's going on. You can't bamboozle them. They know full well that your promises are empty. Your timelines are worthless. Your investors don't exist. Everything is talk, talk, talk. Show me the paperwork. Where is the paperwork? Remember, we were talking for now over a year and a half, almost 2 years now. We're talking about the public-private partnership for education in the city of Yonkers. They'll be the first city in the United States that is going to intends to. Well, it looks like it's really a done deal. They're already on the way of creating a public-private partnership for education to rebuild, revitalize, resurrect, build from scratch. I think it's 36 schools in the city of Yonkers. I don't know how many are going to be built in the initial first phase of this public-private partnership. Nobody knows what the prices will be. The city of Yonkers has even shut down the Commission of Inquiry. Look, it's amazing. The Commission of Inquiry with the Honorable Mr. Richard Brodsky and the Honorable former Lieutenant Governor Richard Ravitch shut down. You can't find their paperwork. Their final analysis is not to be gotten through the city of Yonkers. Can't get it. Can't get it because those stinking, lying thieves at the Board of Education don't want the public to know because they're not ready. Yet they've already spent over $2 million pushing this project along. How much money is it going to cost the taxpayer to do all this? Can we afford to do this? Can we afford to do this? Can we afford to do it right now? Can we? Can we? I actually sent last week a letter. Actually, it wasn't my idea. It was an idea that's being done in New York City. I think it was done in the Bronx. And the point is that they, too, are suffering for infrastructure that's disintegrating, particularly their schools. You know what they did? They were able to get people engaged, parents. Can you believe it? Parents. On a weekend to give their time, to volunteer their time in order to build a room or two, to take a school, 6,000 people in one shot, and they would be directed over the weekends to build, rebuild, refurbish, fix up schools. Isn't that amazing? When there is no money. And the point is there are many people who are not working who can certainly devote their weekends to actually work on these projects. If they're so concerned about their kids getting an education and they believe that the only way they'll get an education is if the building looks better, fine. No problem. We're not in Africa that we need to be teaching classes in the open air. But there's nothing wrong with that. They're certainly learning in Africa. They're learning in other places. We don't seem to be learning here. So I guess maybe one of the prerequisites for learning in Yonkers is that we need to revive our infrastructure, and we need to do it now, but there is no money. So what do you do? Is it such a big to-do to ask 6,000 people to volunteer? We've got 25,000 students in the Yonkers Board of Education. 25,000 students. Can't a team of volunteers, well, if you've got 25,000 students, assuming there's mom and dad for all of these kids, certainly out of 25,000 students, you've got likely less than 50,000 parents. So maybe you got 30,000 parents for the sake of argument. And out of those 30, can we not get 6,000? Can we not get 6,000 parents who can help out? How about 3,000? How about 1,000 people who can be directed on what to do and how to do? And they can work on a few rooms on a particular weekend. And if you can't work on more than one room at a time, no problem. Then a group of, 15 or 20 people will work on one room in one school. And then another group of 15 or 20 will work another room at another school. I mean, they don't put that many people on the job when they refurbish buildings when you talk about regular contractors. So the point is, with some guidance, it could be done. It's always a will. There's that vision again. We don't have a plan, do we? I sent it to the Yonkers Board of Education, Board of Trustees. I guess they can't act fast enough. They don't have the thought process. They're busy with other things. Kids are not important to them, even though that's all you'll ever hear. That's all you'll ever hear. It's all about the kids, but somehow or another, they don't have the ability of satisfying the needs of children growing up, school-age children who need an education. And now we're deflected with this con game, this game in which we've already spent through the Yonkers Board of Education without public notice, all done in the dead of night, or even if it was done in the middle of the afternoon, which it quite often is, no one was ever told, hey, we're spending $2 million, over $2 million on this project that hasn't yet even been decided to be worthy of our time and money. And who gave them the authority to spend $2 million of taxpayers' money? I thought we were always running short of money. Do we do such a great bang-up job in teaching these kids that we can afford to take $2 million of money in order to find out if we're going to be the first one, the big boy on the block that they probably will rip off first? Hey, Thomas DiNapoli, the New York State Comptroller, says very, very succinctly, you better watch what you're doing, guys, in the city of Yonkers, because there are many problems with this whole public-private partnership for education concept that you don't know much enough about. You've placed all your trust in the developer, in the bank, the financier, and all these other things. You don't have a goddamn clue, but you don't care, Mr. Perazio or Mr. Brigida. You don't care. You know why? Because you're going to be in the receiving end one way or the other of largesse, whether it's the largesse of having money, or whether it's the largesse of getting a piece of the action, or whether it's the largesse of patronage, whether it's the largesse of doing this, that, or the other, whether it's the largesse of deciding who will and who will be part of education. Because you're still running roughshod over those idiots at the Board of Trustees who, even under Dr. Syaj, can't get their feet to step one in front of the other, nor take any direction. I've heard enough of all the BS. I spoke to Dr. Syaj. Who cares? What has he done in all the time that he's there? Oh, is the excuse going to be, well, I didn't have a majority? Well, you maligned. You didn't malign. That's the wrong word. You bent somebody's backhand and you got a majority. What have you done with the majority? Nothing other than to cover up the fact that you're actually moving ahead with a public-private partnership. It doesn't matter, folks. I can go on and on and on about the Yonkers concept for the public-private partnership for education. And if those idiots on the Yonkers Board of Education, Board of Trustees, want to vote through, it'll be your money. You'll pay for it. You'll pay for it, and you don't have the money to pay for it. And this is the worst time in the world to pay for it. Why didn't they take whatever they wanted? You know, in all the years that they've been doing this, and this is the most important aspect of the way they conduct business here in Yonkers, and this has been going on for years. When they want to make money on development, what they do is they shut a school down or any other project down. They're willing to sit it out for 20, 30 years. They leave the windows open. They break all elements of a building to allow weather to penetrate, to permeate those buildings. They allow decay to be managed by Mother Nature. So you have snow and you have rain and you have changing weather patterns, and they allow things to decay to the point where it can't even be resurrected. It can't even be salvaged, and they don't care. They would rather get rid of it because they have somebody in mind for future development. And that's the way it works, folks. And they do that at every parcel of land that you see anywhere. And that's the point. When they take a building that's got granite foundation, they don't deduct the value of that from the developer. They let the developer ship it out and resell it somewhere else. We don't get anything from that. That's where the corruption is, because we permit it, because we haven't yet learned. Well, we have, the public has, but these thieves have no care in the world, because they can hide the fact and they'll say, well, we didn't know. We don't even know what it was worth. And we can't figure it out now. And there's no way to trace it. They don't want to bother with it, but they'll do everything they can to fix it for next time. And when next time comes, people forget. And that's the name of the game, isn't it? Stretch it out forever and ever and ever to the point where you feel like you're talking to yourself and you're spinning around in a circle. But unfortunately, there are some people who can maintain their focus despite the spin cycle and get to the point. The point is, we're being hoodwinked again. Yonkers is put on the front burner, and they want us to be the first of its kind in the whole nation of the United States. We're going to pay the costs. We're going to pay for all the issues that come up. And you know what the best part of all is? In Yonkers, the way we conduct it here, we're talking about the government. We're not talking about the people. They wouldn't do this again over and over and over again. They know once they're burned, they're not going to go and stick their hand in the fire again. But not City Hall. You can see in reality, they're not getting burned either. It looks like they're getting burned, but they don't care. They don't care if they made one blunder after the other, because it's not coming out of their pocket. It's just not coming out of their pocket. It's coming out of the taxpayers' pocket. So why should they care if it seems like their hand was burned? Their hand wasn't burned. There's no egg on their face as far as they're concerned, because it's all about money. Do you care if you have egg on your face when you still have money in your pocket, or when you have a patronage mill that you can continuously resurrect over and over? You can hire more people because that's what you choose to do, because you don't have to be concerned, do you? Your hand wasn't burned. You didn't lose your ability to, have purview over the money. Hey, that's what it's all about. You can talk till you're blue in the face. You can make believe that everything is going on and going on great. But until this mayor in the city of Yonkers and stick it to the guy that was the last mayor, then will you know. Only then will you know that what ends up happening is that he doesn't know what he's doing, and only then will you know that you're getting screwed by these people who haven't a clue. They haven't a clue, and that's the whole point, isn't it? That's really the whole point, and we keep on going like this day in and day out, and it's getting a little bit pathetic, if you must know, and I am disgusted. I'm literally disgusted by all of these forms. You know, all I can tell you is that it's getting totally pathetic. Totally pathetic that we're allowing all this stuff to keep on going. And I know that it's inappropriate. It's totally inappropriate that we're allowed to be in a mess, which is kept the public in the dark. The paperwork is not out there. There are some people, and this is what's so interesting. Let's look at it. There are some people who are familiar enough with Yonkers Board of Education, who have knowledge of so much of what's going on, yet they, to no fault of their own, are so afraid that they might lose a teaching position, that they might lose clout for their with the Perazio and his crew, They're afraid that if they say something that's critical of an issue, a critique, question something, an aspect of a particular project, if they question, that they will find that their children who are in the schools will suffer. There is such a fear of retribution in a city of Yonkers that knows how to exact it, and they exact it so well. And they are relentless in painting people for what they are not. Cover up after cover up after cover up, and that's why we are here. We are here at this particular juncture because no one is permitted to speak. No one. If you're a teacher, you're shut down. If you're an administrator, you're shut down. Even if you're a Board of Education, Board of Trustee, President, you're shut down. I mean, really now, the Board of Education, Board of Trustees, as I've been told over and over again, are the taskmasters. They give the directive to the superintendent of school. But you must understand that the way they run roughshod at the Board of Education, it's Mr. Perazio that has caused everyone else to shudder in his wake, and that every time his shadow is even recognized somewhere, they all cringe. He runs the roost. Unbelievable, and yet he's got the audacity to keep smiling and smiling and smiling. And you know, they're all playing a game, an unbelievable game, and it's a game that is worthless to me. Worthless. You know what? I am sick and tired of waiting. I am not going to waste my time waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. Waiting for what? Almost 2 years for the Yonkers Board of Education, Board of Trustees. You know what? I got along without them for 2 years, and we found out exactly what was going on, and they don't like it, and that's their problem. But when the taxpayer realizes what the final figures will be vindicated, and we will show you once and for all what a headache this whole thing has been, a total headache. And it has nothing to do with education. Not one additional child will excel more than they would have had you left this whole process be. Does that mean that the process is correct? The answer is absolutely not. The only concern for the Yonkers Board of Education and every school throughout the nation and the world is to be able to deliver a palatable, understandable, comprehensible, educational effort which will resonate with the student population to whom teachers and schools are promoting their craft, which is education, disseminating information, teaching, causing learning, becoming catalysts to cause the mind to thrive and to strive and to be inquisitive on issues and concerns that will move them forward into a future that has promise, that has promise. Hey, there are people who want to become doctors. There are people who become lawyers. There are people who want to become mechanics. Each one has its worth. Each one will offer something to society. Not everyone can be a doctor. Not everyone can be a doctor because you need more than just doctors. Simple, isn't it? You need to have people who want to become firefighters. You need people who want to become police officers. You need people who need and want and have a desire to become DPW workers. What about parks people? People who work in the parks department. People who enjoy working at the post office. People who enjoy, I don't know, all kinds of things. People who enjoy governance and want to serve the public interest. Hey, these all can be done. each one pays more than the other or less than the other. The point is, you've got people who have a passion for what they do, and that's what they can do as well. So we all have abilities. Question is, what are we going to do with it? What are we supposed to do with it? And that's the whole point. The point of it all is that we need to manage. We're not managing when you got somebody like Parazio running roughshod in the same way, and he's been getting away with murder for I don't know how many years, and this is the way I see it. Other people see it the same way, and other people will say no. But, you know, I know that I got nothing, no skin in that game. That's his game. It's his ploy. That's his way of maligning everything. That's his way of trying to make believe that something matters. It doesn't matter. He doesn't matter. He's already gotten everything he wanted. He's got his beautiful contract. They'll be good till, what, 2017? Good for him. Good for him. And the idiots in the city, well, they're not idiots. They were not informed until after the fact. In fact, we were the ones that said, hey, this isn't even legal what you've done. You've stretched it for too far beyond the allowable contractual agreement. But they didn't care. They did it anyway. You think they didn't know? They just didn't think anybody would pay attention. But we pay attention even though we're never invited. We're never invited to any of their meetings. We're not told of their meetings. When I called last week and asked about a particular meeting in which the Honorable Richard Brodsky was supposed to attend, that's what I understood. It turns out I was told there is no such meeting. Those goddamn liars, they actually can lie to you. That was the communications office that I spoke to. They lied to me. They just lied. Because they can, because there is no difference of any kind if they lie or if they tell you the truth. And you know what? I hear this over and over and over again. Well, nobody in the administration could tell anybody anything at the Board of Education. It's a separate entity. You know what? Go wash your mouth and stop lying. The point is, you have so much influence. You appointed everybody there who's on the Board of Trustees. You got four people already on the Board of Trustees. You twisted the arm of someone who was appointed by another administration. And fine, so everything's hunky-dory now. So why can't you tell people to do the right thing? You can't do anything, can you? Whenever you need to do something, you can't. Whenever you promise to do something, you don't. So what good is it? Oh, are you going to, oh, is the next election process going to be one in which the mayor will promise to get rid of the entire fleet of cars that we shouldn't even be engaged in getting? Oh, I'm sure that'll be the next big project. That'll be the new vision for 2014. Oh, when is it? It's now 13, 15. Is when we have the next election. That's wonderful. So I hope that we take a lot of effort in thinking this one out. And who knows, maybe the mayor will conclude that it's important, even though he promised it would happen last year, that he would get rid of the fleet. He's still got a problem. Evidently, he hasn't been able to resolve it. And then I'm sure you're going to hear crap like what we used to hear from John Lazuski in the past. Well, we had so many cars, and we're obligated to keep on getting new leases, blah, 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 blah. Oh, stop it. And yet, when you were questioned before the city council and when you spoke at the mayor's conference room and you were questioned about it, you said, yeah, no problem. I'll take care of it. Yeah, right. You didn't take care of anything. You lying piece of you-know-what. You lied about it all, and you continue to lie. Thank you, Mr. Lazuski. Your lie keeps on giving year in and year out, year in and year out. And it's so pathetic because, let's face it, has anything happened with the budget? Any paperwork? Did we get a quarterly report, the budget reports that are due? How many reports are missing now? Let's see. I guess we're missing 7 quarterly reports, and we'll be up to 8 soon. Well, so it goes. Well, I see that it's about 10:45. let's find out what's going on in the county. Let's see. Let's first find out what Robert Astorino is saying.
Dear Congress, we're tired of the fighting. Don't tell us government can't work, because it works here in Westchester. County Executive Rob Astorino has reduced spending 5% over 4 years, and he's cut the tax levy 2%. How did he do it? By working in a bipartisan manner, by compromising, by putting results over politics. Astorino didn't just lower the tax levy and spending. He protected the environment, worked with businesses to create 27,000 new jobs, and he added 593 new daycare slots for low-income families and created a food rescue program so no one in Westchester goes hungry. Astorino is proving we can do more with less, with good management and healthy, balanced leadership. Don't tell us progress can't be made in America. Take a look at Westchester, paid for by friends of Rob Astorino.
Well, welcome back. Now that we know what's going on there, let's also advise you what's happening just in a few days with master illusionist Drew Thomas.
Saturday, October 26th at 8, West Point's Eisenhower Hall Theater proudly welcomes master illusionist Drew Thomas in Materialize. His illusions stun the judges on America's Got Talent. Full throttle, high-octane magic. Get your tickets now at IkeHall.com for this one-night-only performance with master illusionist Drew Thomas. Saturday, October 26th at 8, only at West Point's Eisenhower Hall Theater.
Well, we are back, and we're going to do one more because we've been talking so long. Let's find out what's at Westchester Broadway Theater. And this is, let's see, oh, my God, this is for tomorrow. You know, if you haven't planned, this has got to be the way to go. Listen in.
It's some of the most popular music of all time with the incredible swing sound that inspired generations of music lovers. And now you can enjoy it live at the Westchester Broadway Theater Monday evening, October 21st, and Tuesday afternoon, October 22nd, the world-famous Glenn Miller Orchestra. The only band anywhere licensed to perform the original Glenn Miller arrangements of your favorite hits like Tuxedo Junction, Moonlight Serenade, String of Pearls, Chattanooga Choo Choo, and the big band classic In the Mood. An incredible concert for any fan of the sounds of big band swing. And before the show begins, you'll enjoy a delicious served dinner with a choice of 6 entrees and all for one low price. Order tickets online at BroadwayTheater.com or call 914-592-2222. That's 914-592-2222. Come enjoy it all. Great dining, great atmosphere, and of course, the greatest swing music ever. The one and only Glenn Miller Orchestra, Monday evening, October 21st, and Tuesday afternoon, October 22nd, only at the Westchester Broadway Theater.
Well, we are back. This is Westchester on the Level. Well, I guess, you know, went off on those things because those are really, really important to us. And they all matter. These are all issues that have been lingering for a very long time in the city of Yonkers, and it's gotten to the point where it would no longer be done any other way. Let me just see here. Well, it looks like good old George Latimer, an assembly member, Shelley Mayer, they're going to have an October. We're going to have a coffee hour for constituents on Saturday, October 26th, from 9:30 to 11 at the Argonaut Diner located at 1084 Yonkers Avenue. Light refreshments are going to be served. No appointment is necessary. And if you want more information about this, you might want to consider calling Assembly Member Shelley Mayer. Office, her number is 914-779-8805. Number again, 914-779-8805. Others will prefer to call up Senator George Latimer. George Latimer, the senator, he can be reached his office at 914-934-5250. So that's this Saturday, October 26th, from 9:30 to 11 at the Argonaut Diner, located at 1084 Yonkers Avenue. And for those who just don't know exactly where it is, you're going to maybe or possibly need the zip code. It's 10704 Argo Naut, ARGONAUT Diner. So that's important. So this is very nice and very cool. So I think it was, I know it was George Latimer who made this really exciting. He was the one that had gatherings. He called it the Cup of Joe. And it was the Cup of Joe with George Latimer. It was the Cup of Joe with people that he shared. He always shared his prominence, whether in of office. Certainly he shared the prominence of his mind and his intellect and his empathy towards the constituents that he always served. You may or may not agree with his politics, but he was always a gentleman and he was always grassroots. And he could always share a cup of coffee, and he always did. He always gave you the time of day. So very, very interesting. It's a good thing to see. Well, it looks like we've done the major stuff. So we went from the state, and now we've come back down here to the local marketplace. And then what we're going to do, let me just see what this is. Oh, well, legislator Jim Maizano, evidently he's in the running. An endorsement from 32BJ SEIU, labor union 32BJ SEIU. Very nice. Okay. He writes, one issue I worked on with 32BJ is immigration reform, and below is a photo with John Santos, a vice president of 32BJ at the immigration reform rally in White Plains this past June. I enjoyed speaking at the rally, Maizano says, and calling for comprehensive national immigration reform. Yeah, right. It was such a well-done process that everybody knows what he had professed and what would be important. I don't know. These people think that this stuff means anything. You know, it means absolutely nothing. Show us the work. Show us the work. Show us the legislation. Do you know how many people speak to legislation and I just don't get why people talk about concerns. Do you know there is no legislation for public-private partnership, or so everyone says? Shelley Mayer says, no, nothing's happening. Andrea Stewart-Cousin said, no, nothing's happening with public-private partnership. The person who would preside over that particular portfolio, Greg Ball, no legislation, no legislation. And the best part of all is they've been talking about this for almost 2 years and no legislation, which I don't have a problem with because it's not clear what the hell they're doing. But it's so interesting how they're doing everything ass backwards, folks. It's backwards. You know, they're creating the elements of this concept prior to the state understanding, the state legislature understanding, because nobody else understands it either. It's not all put together. What it is that the state wants to create with this public-private partnership. You know, you would think, you would literally think that on the state legislature side of the equation, people would invest the time and the effort. Should it be that important? Maybe it's not important. And it's, to be honest with you, it really has been proven not important by the committee of inquiry, the Ravitch, Brodsky, and financial experts questions, it's been already pointed out that the methodology promoted and postulated by Mr. Perazio, the superintendent of the Yonkers Public School System, are based on erroneous figures that have not been able to suffer the criticism and or the definition of what they are. The definitions are being contested by the Brodsky-Ravitch Commission. Well, if the definitions are being contested, then how can there be validity if you don't know that a particular item is valued at Y or valued at X or valued at B? That's the point, folks. That's what it's all about. And each one of these letters has a value. It has a value, and it's going to come right out of your pocket. You won't even feel it. You'll know you got raped, but you won't know why and when it took place, because it'll happen in the dead of night, and the legislation will be passed, and you will not be permitted access to the whole process. So everywhere I turn, people say, well, no legislation. Nobody's written up any legislation. There is nothing on the books. There's all talk. All talk. You know, can you imagine? Can you imagine? There's all talk. What does that mean? It means absolutely nothing. It means that you can't hang your hat on it. It means that there is nothing that's being planned. It means that there is no concept, no comprehension of what the issues are. And the biggest bullshit response from any legislator is, I'm keeping my mind open to the concept. What are you keeping your mind open to? How come you haven't studied enough to know what you're keeping your mind open to? I'll tell you what I'm keeping my mind open to. I can tell you now. The concept is logical. The concept can work. The concept is doable. The concept is missing. This particular concept is missing the numbers by which to judge every rational concept, every cog in the equation. What's the value of this? What's the value of that? What is the responsibility of government? What's the responsibility of the financier? What is the responsibility of the taxpayer? Who will protect the taxpayer? How are they going to protect the taxpayer? Do we have the expertise to protect the taxpayer? Are we going to set in motion levels of complexity to protect the taxpayer? And will there be responsibility by those who are supposed to be watching the gates from the public suffering a mistake by these people who seem to know it all, except when it comes to the taxpayer bailing them out? Interesting, don't you think? Am I the lunatic? No. I just can't afford all of this, and neither can anyone else, except the people who propose it are the proponents of what? They're getting something in return. They're getting an opportunity to create greater patronage. They're getting an ability to possibly get a piece of the action at the back end that nobody knows about. The deals that are not seen, the deals that never come to light, the deals that the public is never going to see because they're shut down. Where's the contract with Forest City Ratner? Nobody has it. Well, maybe some people have it. I don't know if they're able even to read it. All I know is that when it came to the parking situation almost 22 months ago, We didn't finish the contractual agreement with Forest City Ratner with regard to the parking. Oh, I'm talking inside parking with the city of Yonkers. So we abrogated one of the best and most pertinent money-making, constructs in that whole place to Forest City Ratner. That's where they're making their money. We're not making a dime. We still haven't gotten sales tax revenue. Anytime I'm going to hear sales tax revenue in the future, I'm going to barf. I'll barf on whoever says it because I just can't stand the lies. Anyway, I see that it's already 11 o'clock. Can you believe this? Oh, my goodness. Let me see. And we still have to get to the police Bluetooth Let me just quickly see what's going on. This is Westchester on the Level. If you want to become engaged in our conversation, which at the moment is strictly a monologue, it'll become a conversation when you call. So the number to call is 347-205-9201. Again, 347-205-9201. And you heard our moderator, it's 1100 hours. So let me just see what's happening here. Told you about the Glenn Miller thing. So that's actually today. I don't know if we heard that yet. Let's play this. This is really good. Whoops. Okay, I don't know what I did there. Okay, let's just see here. Oh, let me see. I may have done something here.
Orchestra, the only band anywhere licensed to perform the original Glenn Miller arrangements of your favorite hits like Tuxedo Junction, Moonlight Serenade, String of Pearls, Chattanooga Choo Choo, and the big band classic In the Mood. An incredible concert for any fan of the sounds of big band swing. And before the show begins, you'll enjoy a delicious served dinner with a choice of six entrees, and all for one low price. Order tickets online at BroadwayTheater.com or call 914-592-2222. That's 914-592-2222. Come enjoy it all. Great dining, great atmosphere, and of course, the greatest swing music ever. The one and only Glenn Miller Orchestra. Monday evening, October 21st, and Tuesday afternoon, October 22nd. Only at the Westchester Broadway Theater.
Okay, so I'm sorry for that. I must have touched something to cause the volume to be very low. And so on. So let me just find out what else is happening here. Oh, yeah. Well, we have time to listen to the others later. Well, I want to get then with you to the other issue. And that's the other issue is the Bluetooth. And let's just see how this goes. I'm going to quickly go through it. And I'll be reading, it's a hesitorial, which I write. It's Bluetooth, Freeing the Yonkers Police Department from Political Influence by Hezzy Harris. So let me open up the entire article. There are 86 comments so far. We're not going to go through the comments. They were really salty, and which is fine. They're all fine. The item is so incendiary that you can understand how important this is. So it's called Freeing the Yonkers Police Department from Political Influence. Now, Yonkers Police Department, the YPD brass, seem to be consumed with the internal mess that's been allowed to foment under the aegis of Yonkers Police Benevolent Association President Keith Olson and two of his dubious associates and counterparts, Captain John Muller, Commander of the Yonkers 4th Police Precinct, and Detective Sergeant Brian Moran of the Detective Division. Sometimes individually, at other times in concert, since Olson acceded to the helm of the PBA under the guise of questionable internal union politics, when former PBA President Eddie Armour relinquished his position as PBA President to become Union Treasurer, Olson ran unopposed to take over the union in 2010, and Olson has been stirring the political cauldron ever since. In what turned out to be a bait-and-switch tactic promoted by former Yonkers Mayor Phil Amaconi, who used Olson and his politically astute gophers, well-respected Police Commissioner Robert Taggart was unseated with the lure of John Muller becoming the next Yonkers police commissioner. Now, instead, Edmund Hartnett had acceded to the position of Yonkers police commissioner. Now, for Olson and his friends, the pattern of dismissing friendships and selling out the union with this systematic dismantling of all now defunct units was hardly unique under the Olson-Hartnett reign of terror. Since then, and under Olson's leadership, the membership has paid a heavy price. The City of Yonkers, we'll call them COY, COY, the City of Yonkers, purportedly the third largest city in the state, is also the city devoid of a burglary unit, no school resource officers, despite over 40 public schools, and a membership working without contract for over 5 years. This ever since Olson's cozy relationship with Hartnett and Amicone gelled. At a recent PBA monthly meeting, Olson did not address any questions concerning the alleged unethical conduct by him or his counterparts. He did, however, tell the membership not to look for any type of settlement on a contract with the City of Yonkers until the year 2015. Such a timeline would imprint his reign of ineptitude over the men and women in blue to almost a decade. Now, Olson, Mueller, and Moran's unscrupulous ways have plagued the department with numerous internal complaints of verbal threats, harassments or harassments, unauthorized investigations, unauthorized searches of workstations, missing police personnel files, and of official police records on captains, lieutenants, sergeants association, CLSA, and PBA members, used against personnel as an effective mode of intimidation. See that word, intimidation, retribution, it's all in that culture, all part of the way Yonkers runs its business. There seems also to be internal allegations of excessive fundraising practices and some missing funds that may have never been delivered. There are also reports that there are pending federal lawsuits and more said to be on the way. It is often said that opposites attract. Olson, known to be a schoolyard bully, has little to no education, is inept as a speaker, and currently has a serious credibility problem because of his, quote, thug-like ways, end quote. On the other hand, Mueller and Moran are more educated but lack people skills. All three are driven by their thirst for dominance, control, and power. They salivate at the thought and demonstrate their respective lust by targeting members from their own unions with premeditated discipline notices and staged incidents of acts of harassment to disguise their own actions. For example, according to some insiders, Mueller supposedly received some type of mailing to his home address, but never cooperated with officials in the police department over this allegedly staged mailing by not letting investigators examine his claim. Moran and Olson's brother-in-law, 4th Precinct Lieutenant Anthony Chiarella, have also filed some questionable reports with the department. Sources report that they were using those reports to counteract the negative kickback they were experiencing of late. Captain John Mueller, known as the Joker within the department because of his pasted grin, is perceived as a guy struggling with his own insecurities. Since his induction into the department, both Moran and Mueller have made it very clear their relationship with Olson is very tight. In fact, since Olson took over, he's been manipulating messages to the membership, giving them false hope, so as to buy himself another term in office. The truth widely known to be circulating in the department is that Olson cannot be trusted and that he has lost the confidence of most of the supervisors as well as the membership. His most recent folly was when he, along with Captain John Mueller, fought back a departmental transfer in which they hoodwinked some politicians into rescinding Police Commissioner Charles Gardner's transfer order. That gave the police brass a black eye and also sent shockwaves throughout the CLSA membership because other professional captains ended up transferred in place of Mueller's refusal. That may have given city officials a black eye, too. Since the order was given to save Mueller, he is currently under investigation for an all-night beer party that went into the wee hours of the morning at the 4th Police Precinct. There are reports that Mueller himself gave misleading statements to internal affairs investigators and that he and Olson may have impeded the investigations by advising Internal affairs, they allegedly saw nothing. In fact, since the investigation, John Mueller and his cohorts have been continuing to berate and besmirch a well-decorated police sergeant who allegedly witnessed the commander's gone wild, quote-unquote, party. Now, sources say John Mueller is in full deflective mode. Reports are that he is running about the city offering extraordinary police services to church groups, community activists, and city educators as a protective cloak against being disciplined and transferred. His conduct is not authorized. He has been setting up fruitless meetings with these groups for self-serving reasons. Sources close to his day-to-day activities claim that Mueller is a wolf in sheep's clothing and will purportedly lie and do just about anything to give these groups a sense of false security. This internal investigation is nearing a year, and the city of Yonkers owes it to its citizens to clean up the foul odor. The department also needs to closely scrutinize Mueller's original statement, which is reportedly full of discrepancies. Give me a moment. I'm going to take a sip. Thank you. So YPD's top brass and city officials seem to be struggling on what to do with the Yonkers PBA leader and his friends who are embroiled in controversy. One has to wonder why. Is it because Yonkers godfathers, former Yonkers mayors Angelo Martinelli, John Spencer, Phil Amaconi, and former New York State Senator Nicholas Spano bought his silence over a no-contract deal by giving his sister a high-paying city job and getting Detective Sergeant Brian Moran's mother her job back with the city after she was terminated? Yes, the godfathers all have a hand or two in it. Is it possible the YPD and or Yonkers Corporation Council is intentionally interfering with these investigations as per the directive of present Mayor Mike Spano and the pressure exacted over him by the godfathers, quote-unquote, noted above in this paragraph? If that is so, then they will also be held accountable when the federal lawsuits are revealed or when the Department of Justice moves to widen their investigation into alleged union corruption. There is a definite rancid stench of dirty politics that have shortchanged the hardworking police professionals of the Yonkers Police Department. It appears these rogue cops are getting some type of protection because of their past political connections. The cancer permitted to ravage the YPD from the inside will come to consume the godfathers, quote-unquote, and other politicians. Mayor Mike Spano must take the bull by the horns, lest he be gored. Well, as dark clouds hover over Olson and his two cronies, there are some things that are very apparent to the CLSA and PBA membership. Olson continues to drive about Yonkers and beyond in a city-owned vehicle with a union stipend that costs the membership $4,000 every month, equating to $48,000 every year with free city gas and a credit card. In all the years under Olson's reign, when was the last time anyone took a look at the books? The membership is also aware that other municipalities are getting decent contracts as they show up to work. Things are not looking good for the YPD as there are echoes that the Department of Justice is already conducting investigations into the YPD. In reading undeniable reports, one may infer Department of Justice will get full and unfettered cooperation from more insiders than City Hall can imagine. So who is protecting these guys? Former Senator Nick Spano's boys going back over a decade has been Mueller. He has moved up the ladder with Nick Spano's help and influence to this day. Former Mayor John Spencer interceded on behalf of Kathy Moran, despite her being fired by Mayor Mike Spano, and forced Mayor Spano and to take Kathy Moran back. Kathy Moran is Brian Moran's mother. And Olson, he's been protected all these years by Phil Amaconi. Seems behind every man is a stronger man. Truth be told, it is a standard that can no longer be tolerated. It's up to Mayor Mike Spano to remove the political influences from the situation and permit Police Commissioner Charles Gardner to do right by the U.S. Constitution, New York State Constitution, and the Yonkers City Charter, and the Yonkers Police Department's men and women in blue, or get someone who can. The YPD cannot wait for a remedy any longer. Yes, folks, that's the way it is. Just that's the way it is. Oh, God. Well, so far, there are many, many comments. You might want to become, well, you just might want to find out what's happening here and so on. So really good stuff. Hope you can appreciate the value of that article. And that's part of the ongoing Blue Truth series. And there are links to, I think, seven other stories about the concern. So really important stuff. Now let's just see what else is happening. Let me quickly go here. Oh, I see it's about 11:15. Let me play this for you because it's so important. We're trying to catch up with the stuff that's here. Oh yeah, we all forgot about this. Well, Magical Nights program on October 30th.
Absolutely amazing. I couldn't believe my eyes. I still don't believe it.
It was incredible. How did they do those things?
What's everybody so excited about? It's the astonishing night of magic, mystery, and illusion that's coming to the Westchester Broadway Theater on Wednesday, October 30th, when they present Magical Nights.
That was the most amazing thing I've ever seen.
This awe-inspiring production features illusionists, magicians, and mentalists, including Peter Samuelson, David Corsaro, and Michael Dubois, as well as your host for the evening, magician and comedian Harrison Greenbaum, the man the New York Daily News called the hardest-working man in comedy. It's a unique combination of jaw-dropping magic and knee-slapping comedy. And before the show, you'll enjoy a delicious served dinner with a choice of six entrees.
My kids couldn't believe it. Neither could I.
Order tickets online at BroadwayTheater.com or call 914-592-2222. That's 914-592-2222. Don't miss the unforgettable experience that Time Out New York called New York's best magic. Magical Nights, one night only, Wednesday, October 30th at the Westchester Broadway Theater.
I couldn't believe my own eyes.
Welcome back. This is Westchester on the Level. We're going to now head out internationally and this is really quite interesting. Evidently, terror is suspected in a deadly Russia bus blast. A bomb blast tore through a bus in the southern Russian city of Volgograd on Monday, killing at least five people, authorities said, with a suicide bomber suspected as being responsible. The explosion also wounded 17 people, seven of whom were in grave condition. Local investigators said the attack was the deadliest outside Russia's volatile North Caucasus region to take place in nearly 3 years. Today, meaning Monday, at 2.05 p.m., an unknown explosive device detonated on a passenger bus in the city of Volgograd, causing human casualties, Russia National Anti-Terrorism Committee said in a statement. Russia's Interfax news agency later reported that investigators suspect a female suicide bomber was responsible. Citing a source in the Regional Investigative Committee office, Interfax said identity documents belonging to the suspected bomber were found near the site and that she was believed to have been the wife of an Islamist militant. Insurgents who say they are fighting to create an Islamic state in Russia's mostly Muslim North Caucasus have carried out deadly bombings inside and outside the region, made up of several provinces along Russia's southern border. Now, the insurgents claimed responsibility for a suicide bombing that killed 37 people at Moscow Airport in January of 2011 and two nearly simultaneous suicide bombings that killed 40 people on the Moscow subway in 2010. Volgograd is a city of around 1 million people that lies about 560 miles southeast of Moscow and a few hundred kilometers north of the North Caucasus and Black Sea resort city of Sochi, where Russia will host the 2014 Winter Olympics. President Vladimir Putin has staked a reputation on the games and ordered authorities to boost security in the North Caucasus, where the Islamist insurgency is rooted in two post-Soviet wars pitting Chechen separatists against the Kremlin. Well, evidently, you know, all this stuff about Syria and everything else has really moved along the way. and a frightening situation because, again, this is an extension of everything that's been allowed to take place in the Middle East, and it went from Syria when the Arab Spring eventually got to Syria and all of this. This is going to be a major challenge, a major, major challenge to what's going on in the southern belly of Russia, and that's where they're extremely vulnerable. Again, the sadness here, gunmen kill three in an attack on Egypt's Coptic Christians. Again, the silence of the media is frighteningly, I'm appalled by it, just appalled. It seems like gunmen riding a motorbike shot and killed three people when they fired on a group leaving a wedding at a Coptic Christian church in Cairo late on Sunday. Egypt's Interior Ministry said the attack was the first appearing to target Christians in the Egyptian capital since the July 3 military coup that ousted Islamist President Mohamed Morsi. A woman, a man, and an 8-year-old girl were killed, and 9 others were wounded as they emerged from a wedding held at a church in North Cairo's Al-Warak a neighborhood, the ministry said. And there were 2 men on a motorbike, and one of them opened fire, said the Interior Ministry. A health ministry official confirmed that 3 people had been killed, but said 12 people had been wounded. Ahmed Al-Ansari from the health ministry told Agence France-Presse that 4 of the 12 were in critical condition, adding that the number of wounded could rise. Egyptian Christians, the majority of whom are Copts, have been targeted since an August 14 crackdown by security forces on 2 camps of Morsi supporters in Cairo. Islamists were enraged by the deadly crackdown, and they accused Coptic Christians backing the coup that toppled Morsi, who belongs to the Islamist Muslim Brotherhood and was Egypt's first democratically elected president. This perception was fueled by the appearance of Coptic Pope Tawadros II, alongside Army Chief General Abdel Fattah al-Sisi, when he announced Morsi's removal from office on television, and Muslim leaders and other politicians were also present. Now, rights groups say that Copts, who account for 6 to 10% of Egypt's 85 million people, have come under attack mainly in the provinces of Minya and Asyut in central Egypt. On October 9, London-based Amnesty International said that more than 200 Christian-owned properties were attacked and 43 churches seriously damaged across the country since the August 14 crackdown against Morsi supporters in Cairo. In its report, Amnesty International blamed Egyptian security forces for failing to stop revenge attacks against Coptic Christians after the Cairo crackdown. In light of the previous attacks, particularly since Morsi's ousting on July 3, a backlash against Coptic Christians should have been anticipated, yet security forces failed to prevent attacks or intervene to put an end to the violence, the rights group said. Now, Egypt's Copts have long complained of discrimination and marginalization, particularly under Morsi's 1-year rule. Egypt's new army-installed government is engaged in a widespread crackdown on Islamists, jailing more than 2,000 since the pro-Morsi camps were stormed in August. Morsi himself is in custody and is to go on trial on November 4 over deadly clashes between his supporters and opponents outside the presidential palace in December 2012. Excuse me. Most of the Brotherhood's leaders, including its supreme guide, Mohammed Badi, are also in custody. An Egyptian court last month banned the Muslim Brotherhood from operating and seized its assets. So let's listen in to the report as well. Bear with me.
Thank you. batterie d'un appareil électrique devenu encombrant. Recycler, donner, échanger ou réparer. À vous de choisir sur écosystème.fr.
Écosystème.
C'est
simple, c'est de recycler.
Okay, here's the report.
More blood spilt in the suburbs of the Egyptian capital. This time, after gunmen sprayed bullets at a Coptic church in the late hours of Sunday. The unidentified attackers fired indiscriminately.
Everyone knows that every Sunday there's a wedding in the church. There was a lot of traffic outside when a motorbike and a car approached the crowd. The car stopped and the gunman on the motorcycle started shooting and ran away.
Security was tight after the carnage that enveloped the streets of Cairo's Al-Warraq neighborhood. The attack signaled the spread of violence that has gripped Egypt since the coup that ousted Islamist President Mohamed Morsi on July the 3rd.
What is happening is affecting all of Egypt, and not only the Christians. This is enough. People getting sick and tired of this.
Coptic Christians make up 10% of Egypt's 85 million people. But this was the first attack targeting Christians in Cairo, who accused of that and the overthrow of Morsi, the country's first elected leader.
That's the report. It's just a little bit frightening, if you must know. It really is. Wow. Just amazing. Well, some interesting stuff with regard to the World Cup. France is going to play Ukraine in the World Cup playoff. France was paired with Ukraine in Monday's draw for the World Cup qualifying playoffs in Europe, while Portugal will take on Sweden, Iceland will play Croatia, and Greece will face Romania for a right to compete in next year's tournament in Brazil. France has been drawn against Ukraine in their playoff for a place at the 2014 World Cup in Brazil, and the tie is one of four playoffs among European teams vying for the right to take part in the tournament. Cristiano Ronaldo and Portugal were paired against Zlatan Ibrahimovic's Sweden in Monday's draw. Minnows Iceland will need to overcome Croatia if they are to compete in their first World Cup, while Greece will take on Romania. The two-legged ties are scheduled to take place on November 15 and 19, with Ukraine, Portugal, Iceland, and Greece playing at home in their first legs. The four winners will complete Europe's 13 entries in the 32-team World Cup draw on December 6 in Salvador in Brazil. Wow, isn't that unbelievable? That's just unbelievable. Well, we'll be following that. That's going to be a very, very interesting race for sure. And we'll see how that goes. So we'll be keeping you up to date. It's very hard to get, to get information with regard to that. And then we've got some good news, I guess, to some extent. The abducted Turkish Airlines pilots were released in Syria. Two Turkish airline pilots abducted near Beirut Airport last August were freed on Saturday. The pilots were kidnapped by a group demanding that Syrian rebels release nine Lebanese Shiites who were also subsequently released. So let's listen to the report. Bear with me a moment. We should get started. Okay, bear with me. Okay.
Free and home at last. Ending more than a year in captivity, the pilgrims are given a hero's welcome as overjoyed crowds celebrate their return outside Beirut's international airport. Tears of joy from family members now finally able to see their loved ones in the flesh.
We have been reborn in the last 4 days of freedom. The most important thing is that we are all in good health. We were in Azaz. We were moved around. We got out on Wednesday and spent a few days in Turkey.
As celebrations continue into the night, Hezbollah's yellow flags fly among the fanfare. In May 2012, the 9 hostages were picked up in the province of Aleppo in the north of Syria while returning from a pilgrimage in Iran. Despite repeated denials by their families, their captors accused the hostages of belonging to Hezbollah, the Lebanese Shia party that actively supports the Assad regime. For Security General Abbas Ibrahim, the challenge of insulating Lebanon from neighboring Syria's civil war has proven to be a difficult task.
The story isn't over, only a piece of it is. It's true it is difficult, but nothing is too difficult with determination.
The story wasn't over. Mere minutes after landing Beirut, a plane carrying 2 free Turkish airline pilots landed in Istanbul. The pilots were abducted in Beirut in August of this year. Their release comes as part of a deal that resulted in the freedom of the 9 Lebanese pilgrims.
Okay, well, that's the report out of there. And let's just see what else is happening on the scene. There's just so much that's going on that it's really hard to keep up with it. 1 second. Now, this is interesting as well. It seems that Saudi Arabia has rejected rotating the UN Security Council's seat, as you must have heard. This happened on Friday. Saudi Arabia said on Friday it would not take up its rotating seat on the United Nations Security Council, citing double standards, which it said hampered the world body's ability to end conflicts. It is the second time this month that Saudi Arabia has publicly expressed discontent over what it sees as the Security Council's failure to take action to stop a civil war in Syria that has killed more than 100,000 people. So let's listen to this report as well. Bear with me a moment as we manage this. Okay. Okay, we should be fine in a
moment. Saudi Arabia. First, Saudi Arabia's UN delegation celebrated the country's election to the Security Council. Then, just hours later, Saudi state television revealed that Riyadh was rejecting the seat, saying the international body is failing to resolve major world conflicts such as the civil war in Syria, allowing the ruling regime in Syria to kill its people and burn them with chemical weapons in front of the entire world without any punishment. Is clear proof and evidence of the UN Security Council's inability to perform its duties and shoulder its responsibilities.
On-again, off-again positions of increased concern then backing away, as they read it, with regard to Syria.
Saudi Arabia backs the rebels against Bashar al-Assad. Earlier this month, the Saudi foreign minister canceled a speech at the UN in frustration at the international body's inability to stop the civil war. The Saudis have called for reforms of the Security Council, though without saying which reforms it wants.
Well, that is the report. And let's just go back. There's so much more. My God, time flies when we're having fun, as they say. Just bear with me a second. You know, I should play for you what's going on in case you guys are planning. There'll be more stuff to plan for. Let me see. We got... That's the Flamingos.
Never Say Goodbye and their hit recording of what many call the greatest doo-wop song ever, I Only Have Eyes for You. And remember, before the concert begins, you'll enjoy a delicious served dinner with a choice of 6 entrees and all for one low price. Order tickets online at BroadwayTheater.com or call 914-592-2222. That's 914-592-2222. Don't miss this rare New York appearance by one of doo-wop's classic vocal groups, The Flamingos. One night only, Monday, November 11th, only at the Westchester Broadway Theater.
Okay, well, we're back. And this is one more thing that's happening toward the end of this month. And, I forgot, this is also in November if you want to plan ahead. This is interesting. It's the tribute to the King, Elvis himself.
One of our most exciting concerts ever is returning to the Westchester Broadway Theater Tuesday, November 19th, as we welcome back by popular demand, the Tribute to the King. With not one, but two of the country's best Elvis tribute performers, Danny Vernon and Gary Wesley, spanning the King's career from the groundbreaking early days of the 50s to his triumphant Las Vegas return and everything in between.
Don't be cruel.
It's an incredible show with all the look, the voice, the costumes, the swagger, and of course, the most memorable hits of this rock and roll genius. And before the show, you'll enjoy a delicious served dinner with a choice of six entrees and all for one low price.
Don't stop.
Order tickets online at BroadwayTheater.com or call 914-592-2222. That's 914-592-2222. Come experience it all. Great dining, great atmosphere, and great rock and roll entertainment. Because at the WBT, it's always more than just a show. The Tribute to the King, one night only, Tuesday, November 19th at the Westchester Broadway Theater.
Well, this is also very interesting. Let's listen to the report with regard to France summoning the U.S. ambassador over spying. This is an interesting report as well. The Snowden affair is really reverberating to an unbelievable extent. Bear with me a moment. Since the UN National Security Agency recorded millions of French phone calls, including those involving individuals involved links to terrorism. That was the report in Le Monde, French paper. Listen in.
Shocking and unacceptable. That's how the French government reacted to revelations by Le Monde newspaper that the U.S. National Security Agency was spying on France.
We obviously have a very close relationship with U.S. intelligence services to fight terrorism, for example. But if a friend, an ally, spies on France or other European countries, that is totally unacceptable.
Le Monde's report, based on documents leaked by Edward Snowden back in June, says the NSA swept up more than 70 million phone records over a 30-day period. The NSA program automatically recorded conversations from flagged numbers as well as text messages based on keywords. But the NSA didn't just target people suspected of terrorism, but also high-profile individuals from the world of business and politics.
We'd already been alerted back in June, and we had a strong reaction, but apparently we have to do more. These types of actions targeting privacy between partners are completely unacceptable, and we must quickly make sure that they are no longer in practice.
Over the summer, Snowden's leaked documents showed the NSA was spying on several French embassies and the French mission at the United Nations.
Okay, well, that's what's going on there. Let's see what's happening specifically in Europe besides that. This is really quite interesting because it's been really quite a while. France's company called EDF, I think it stands for Electricité de France, if I remember correctly. So French energy giant EDF has signed an agreement to build at least one next-generation nuclear reactor in England for a total cost of 19 billion euros. The utility company announced on Monday the European pressurized water reactor, EPR, designed by French nuclear developer Areva, will be built at Hinkley Point C in Somerset, southwest England. The contract will last for 35 years from the date of commissioning, which is expected in 2023. The reactor will supply around 7% of the UK's electricity needs, and under the deal, EDF said it would take a 45 to 50% stake in the consortium, while its partners, China General Nuclear Corporation and China National Nuclear Corporation, are expected to take 30 to 40%. Areva will get 10%. EDF said it was in talks to build two EPRs in Sizewell C in Suffolk, Southwest England, while the agreement is a boon for the French nuclear industry at a time when the government has pledged to reduce the country's dependence on nuclear power. It was also hailed as a jobs and investment boost for the United Kingdom. And this deal means £16 billion of investment coming into the country and the creation of 25,000 jobs, British Prime Minister David Cameron said in a statement released in London today. Now, this also marks the next generation of nuclear power in Britain, which has an important part to play in contributing to our future energy needs, he said, in reference to warnings by regulators that the UK risks electricity blackouts unless it starts replacing obsolete power plants. Under the deal, EDF will earn 92.50 British pounds, it's about 109 euros, per megawatt hour, or 89.5 British pounds if the second nuclear plant project in Sizewell goes ahead. Now, the price is roughly double the current wholesale price for electricity in the UK. Now, the nuclear industry has been under a cloud since the 2011 Fukushima, Japan disaster. Germany has decided to phase out nuclear power, while Italy has scrapped a planned nuclear program, and France has pledged to cut atomic power to 50% of its electricity mix from 75% today. However, Britain's government and main opposition parties support nuclear power, and anti-nuclear sentiment among the population is muted by comparison with other parts of Europe. This marks the next generation of nuclear power in Britain, Cameron said in a statement. Well, interesting, don't you think? Which is, wow. Well, this is also really quite interesting in reference to this. Thousands of people in Niger have protested on Saturday against French nuclear firm Areva, which has been mining uranium in the impoverished country for nearly 50 years, one of the organizers said. The aim of the protest, gathering some 5,000 people, is to support the government in its upcoming discussions with Areva on the subject of our uranium. Azaoua Mamame told Agence France-Presse. Several other sources confirmed the turnout number. Now, last Sunday, Prime Minister Brigitte Rafini vowed that Niger would review its dealings with a French firm with a fine-tooth comb and accusations that the partnership was unbalanced. Now, Rafini specified that the contracts with Areva subsidiaries Somer and Cominac, which end in 2013, would be reviewed. The protesters, a mix of local residents, marched on the streets of Alit in northern Niger, shouting anti-Areva slogans. They accused the nuclear giant of polluting the environment, provoking radioactivity, and not showing interest in the concerns of local inhabitants, one protester said. The population has inherited 50 million tons of radioactive residues stocked in Arlit, and Areva continues to freely pump 20 million cubic meters of water each year while the population dies of thirst, he said. Areva is the world's second largest uranium producer and extracts more than a third of its uranium in Niger, which is among the world's top producers of uranium, but also one of its poorest countries. Whoa. My God, you know, so many concerns. It's just amazing. When you look at all of this, I get the sense, I don't know about you, that is just happening all over the place, over and over and over again. and it just doesn't seem to quit. So fascinating stuff. Let's find out what Mr. Astorino has to say.
Dear Congress, we're tired of the fighting. Don't tell us government can't work, because it works here in Westchester. County Executive Rob Astorino has reduced spending 5% over 4 years, and he's cut the tax levy 2%. How did he do it? By working in a bipartisan manner, by compromising, by putting results over politics. Astorino didn't just lower the tax levy and spending. He protected the environment, worked with businesses to create 27,000 new jobs, and he added 593 new daycare slots for low-income families and created a food rescue program so no one in Westchester goes hungry. Astorino is proving we can do more with less, with good management and healthy, balanced leadership. Don't tell us progress can't be made in America. Take a look at Westchester. Paid for by friends of Rob Astorino.
Welcome back. This is Westchester on the Level. My name is Hezzy Aris. Again, if you want to join us, 347 is the area code, 205-9201. Well, on the financial in the marketplace, some fascinating stuff has come out over the weekend. J.P. Morgan's going to pay $13 billion over mortgage claims. J.P. Morgan Chase & Company has tentatively agreed, this is on Sunday, to pay $13 billion to settle allegations surrounding the quality of mortgage-backed securities it sold in the run-up to the 2008 financial crisis. A person familiar with the negotiations between the bank and the federal government said Saturday. Now, if the agreement is finalized, it would be the government's highest profile enforcement action related to the financial meltdown that plunged the economy into the deepest recession since the Great Depression of the 1930s. The person who spoke on condition of anonymity because the deal has not been finalized said that Attorney General Eric Holder, Associate Attorney General Tony West, J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon, and the bank's general counsel, Stephen Cutler, negotiated the tentative settlement in a Friday night phone call. The person said the tentative agreement does not resolve a criminal investigation of the bank's conduct. It is being handled by federal prosecutors in Sacramento, California. Now, on Friday night, Holder told the bank that a non-prosecution agreement was a non-starter, meaning that the Justice Department will continue to conduct the criminal investigation of the financial institution, said the person. Now, as part of the deal, the Justice Department expects J.P. Morgan to cooperate with a continuing criminal probe of the bank's issuance of mortgage-backed securities between 2005 and 2000, the person said. Now, J.P. Morgan spokesman Brian Marcioni and Justice Department spokesman Brian Fallon declined to comment. Of the $13 billion, $9 billion is fines or penalties, and $4 billion will go to consumer relief for struggling homeowners, the person said. When the housing bubble burst in 2007, bundles of mortgages sold as securities soured, and the investors who bought them lost billions. In the aftermath, a public outrage boiled over that no high-level Wall Street executives had been sent to jail. Now, some lawmakers and other critics demanded that the big bailed-out banks and senior executives be held accountable. In response, the government in January of 2012 set up a task force of federal and state law enforcement officials to pursue wrongdoing with regard to mortgage securities. In September, J.P. Morgan agreed to pay $920 million and admit that it failed to oversee trading that led to a $6 billion loss that year in its London operation. That combined amount in settlements with three regulators in the United States and one in Britain is one of the largest fines ever levied against a financial institution. In another case, the company agreed to pay a $100 million penalty and admitted that its traders acted recklessly with the London trades. In August, the Justice Department accused Bank of AmeriCorp, the second largest U.S. bank, of civil fraud in failing to disclose risks and misleading investors in its sale of $850 million in mortgage bonds in 2008. The Securities and Exchange Commission filed a related lawsuit, and the government estimates that investors lost more than $100 million on the deal. Bank of America disputes the allegations. The latest action against the beleaguered J.P. Morgan brought the weight of the Obama administration against the bank, which has enjoyed a reputation for managing risk better than its Wall Street competitors. J.P. Morgan came through the financial crisis in better shape than most of its rivals, and Diamond, its CEO, quality of the bonds they sold. J.P. Morgan settled SEC charges in June of 2011 by agreeing to pay $153.6 million and reached another such agreement for $296.9 million last November. The banks in all the SEC cases were allowed to neither admit nor deny wrongdoing, a practice that brought criticism of the agency from judges and investor advocates alike. But in the first, for a major company, J.P. Morgan admitted to the agreement with the SEC over the $6 billion trading loss in its London operation that had failed in its oversight. The admission could leave the bank vulnerable to millions of dollars in lawsuits. J.P. Morgan also reached settlements over the trade loss with the Federal Reserve, the U.S. Office of Comptroller of the Currency, and Britain's Financial Conduct Authority. The Justice Department is still pursuing a criminal investigation of the trading loss and a possible cover-up at the bank. Two of the bank's former traders in London are facing criminal charges. The SEC also is investigating individuals involved in the trading loss, and mounting legal costs from government proceedings pushed J.P. Morgan to a rare loss in the third quarter, the first under Diamond's leadership. The bank reported October 11 that it set aside $9.2 billion in the July-September quarter to cover a string of litigation stemming from back to the Middle East coverage with regard to whether Turkey's secular model is broken. Let's just look and hear the analysis. Bear with me a moment. And it's the analysis, whether secularism is winning the day or not. Bear with me. We should be starting any second now.
Bienvenue, welcome to reporters Frost Bankette's eye on the big stories around the world. In this edition, how the dangerous mix of politics and religion have brought Turkey to a dangerous crossroads. A state whose founding principle was the separation of prayer and power has an elected prime minister who is publicly Muslim and has been accused of squashing the people to make them fit his Islamic agenda. Turkey sits between East and West, but where does its future lie? This year's protests showed how deeply some people resent policies that are now shaping their lives. Our reporters James Andre and Fatma Kizilboga sent us this report from Istanbul.
Thank you, Mr. Erdogan. University students express their gratitude to the Prime Minister, who has just fulfilled their prayers.
The ban on Islamic headscarves in the public sector was officially lifted yesterday in our country. This means that the ordeal that was imposed on us for years has come to an end.
Turkish society is very divided over the issue of the veil, and for some passers-by, this demonstration is a provocation. Those who oppose women wearing headscarves in public administration accuse the government of trying to Islamize Turkish society. But to these students, this is an important reform. Now they can consider a career as civil servants without having to remove their veil.
I will become a proud teacher who wears a veil, and though I have not lived it, I will tell my pupils about the struggle of our older sisters and how much they had to go through in the past. I will explain that this isn't a burden, but freedom.
In 1997, the army reinforced a ban on Islamic headscarves in public services, schools, and universities. This followed closely a military coup deposing an Islamist government.
Hello. Today we will study vocabulary.
At that time, Fatma was teaching at public secondary school. As a devout Muslim, she wore a headscarf. She says the school's management started harassing her and pushing her to resign shortly after the coup. She resisted for a few months, then quit and went to work in a private school. 15 years later, she has the option of reclaiming her job in the public sector, but still feels bitter.
Each time I walked past my old school, I felt like I was reliving that period. I felt uncomfortable. I was sad or angry. Sometimes I even wanted to take revenge. But I've always known that justice would prevail.
Police is on high alert around this mosque in Ankara. Prime Minister Erdogan is attending the funeral of two former members of parliament from the extreme-right MHP party that took 13% of the vote in the 2011 parliamentary elections. A few months ahead of local elections, the ruling AK party is catering to its Islamist electoral base, and Erdogan's speeches are growing more and more explicit.
We want to shape tomorrow's strong generation with access to computers. We want a devout generation, not a generation that's addicted to drugs.
Erdogan and his AK party are in a strong position for 2014's election. When they were elected in 2002, the country had just recovered from a harsh economic crisis. Since then, Turkey has had a decade of strong development and prosperity. An economic track record that leaves the CHP, the main secular opposition party, little to criticize. Very CHP candidate in one of Istanbul's districts. What she does condemn is the government's Islamization of society.
We're going to Beşiktaş, where you'll meet members from my organization.
Ferihan is also president of Istanbul's Alcohol Shop Association. The sale of alcohol has been very clearly targeted by Erdogan's reforms, the latest of which bans its sale in shops between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m.
How is business going?
Not so well.
How have the new alcohol restrictions affected your turnover?
Turnover has jumped by 40%.
The government has also banned advertising alcohol and given retailers 1 year to comply.
Well, we don't have the time to continue because the report is much longer. We'll try to cover this again another day. Tomorrow is Tuesday. Richard Mayrock, co-host of the show, will join us from 10 to 11, and we'll try to cover other situations thereafter. So, again, I want to thank you for joining us today. I hope you found it interesting, and there are a lot of issues that confront us on the local level as well as lessons we can learn from the international level. So I'm sure you're taking it. And be well, and thanks again for joining us. Bye.
It's 20.